chapter 18. After all, I'm an heir. Now, if we are children, then we are heirs, heirs of God, and co-heirs with Christ, if indeed we share in his sufferings in order that we may also share in his glory. Romans 8:17.
There may be a lot of ways to become wealthy in this world, but one of the easiest methods is to be named an heir, even if you don't know what you did to become one. In late 1996, a Spanish businessman, Eduardo Sierra, was away on business in Stockholm, Sweden. While there, he decided to visit a nearby church to pray. The building was empty except for a coffin containing the remains of a recently deceased man. Eduardo knelt and prayed for the deceased, then signed a condolence book after he saw a note requesting that all who prayed for the dead man also sign their names and addresses. Eduardo noted with sadness that his was the first name on the list. Several weeks passed, and Eduardo nearly forgot about the prayer he had offered on behalf of a man he had never met. So he was surprised one day to get a call from the Swedish capital from another man who also was unknown to him. The man was an attorney, and the conversation went something like this. "Mr. Sierra, perhaps you remember saying a prayer several weeks ago in Stockholm for the recently deceased Mr. Jens Svensson." Mr. Svensson was a 73-year-old real estate dealer with no close relatives. He had stipulated in his will that whoever prays for my soul gets all my belongings. Since you were the only person who signed the condolence book, all of Mr. Svensson's assets, in the amount of more than $1 million, are now legally yours. How would you like to arrange for the transfer of these funds? In the blink of an eye, Eduardo Sierra had become a very wealthy man. He had never met Jens Svensson. He had only read of him. But suddenly, everything that once belonged to Mr. Svensson now belonged to Eduardo. That's what it can mean to be an heir. That story floored me when I first heard it. No matter what you think about the legitimacy of praying for the souls of the deceased, it's almost impossible not to put yourself in Eduardo's shoes, isn't it? You almost can't help but wonder what it would feel like to be Eduardo and suddenly find yourself the heir of an enormous fortune. You know your prayer didn't earn you the windfall. Rather, everything depended on the grace of the one who named you heir. I wonder, if a story like this can stoke our imaginations, why doesn't a text like Romans 8:17 fire it all the more? It's true that Eduardo inherited more than $1 million, but a single poor investment could make all that money disappear. Or it could be stolen, embezzled, lost. And even if it multiplies itself 10 times in the next few years, one day it will be Eduardo's turn to die, and he won't be able to take the cash with him any more than Mr. Svensson could. On the other hand, the inheritance promised to believers can never be stolen, embezzled, lost, or otherwise taken away. It's eternal. And it isn't merely $1 million. It's everything God has. This universe is vast, and whatever's out there, a solar system of gold, a constellation of sapphires, a galaxy of diamonds, belongs to God, and he has promised to give it all to his heirs. If you're a believer, that means you. There's more than that, however, much more. As vast as the cosmos is, it's only a tiny fraction of God's estate. The riches of God can't begin to be contained in something as puny as this universe, and you have been named God's heir. That means that whatever he has, you will have. Who can wrap their mind around that? One word of caution, however. Whenever you find yourself named as an heir, you'd be wise to check the will carefully. Every word counts. That is certainly true with Romans 8:17. Read it again slowly. First, the declaration. Now, if we are children, then we are heirs, heirs of God and co-heirs with Christ. Are you a child of God through faith in Christ? If you can answer yes, then this text declares you are an heir of God. Astonishing, fabulous, unbelievable. True enough, but keep reading. If indeed we share in his sufferings, in order that we may also share in his glory. What power tiny words can contain. If we share in Christ's sufferings, Paul insists, only then will we share in his glory. If we want the glory, then we must expect the suffering. One doesn't come without the other. Paul can't conceive of a Christian who goes through this life without suffering. That is why he could write in Philippians 1:29, "For it has been granted to you on behalf of Christ, not only to believe on him, but also to suffer for him." The word translated "granted" in this verse is a verbal form of a Greek word usually rendered "grace." We have been graced, Paul says, not only with the faith that brings us into God's family, something we all cherish, but also with the suffering that inevitably accompanies that faith, a gift we just as soon leave unopened. The faith and the suffering are equally a gift of God's grace, and together they work to make us heirs of the Lord of glory. We may never know all the reasons why suffering should play such a big role in the drama God is directing on this planet. Yet when we read His Word, when we check the script and peruse the will, we can clearly see that the play doesn't go on without it. We may not understand this, but it's true. The blockbuster little word, if, sees to that. If we share in His sufferings, then we will also share in His glory. How do we respond to such news? I don't know about you, but when the promise is that huge and the promise giver is that faithful, I can live with a little ambiguity. After all, I'm an heir, you know.